Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. I'm Jackie Cation, your host of the Dork Forest. Here are the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song you just heard, the theme to the Dork Forest. He will sing his words to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio. Yay. And Vilmos fixes my website, JackieCation.com. On JackieCation.com, there's a lot of things going on. You can watch me do stand-up. You can see my schedule for stand-up. There's a player to just play the show if you want. You can play it on DorkForest.com or on iTunes or however you play podcasts, of course. You can review the show on iTunes if you like. That, I think, is supposed to help and do good things. On JackieCation.com, there are also the Amazon banner. You can order from Amazon by going through that portal, and I get a little bit of a kickback. Doesn't cost you extra. And there is merchandise if you want Dork Forest t-shirts. I have some hoodies in stock and Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirts, and then I have a stand-up shirt and my CD and DVDs. So that's that. Oh, the other thing is the donation button. If you enjoy the show and you want to donate to the Dork Forest, feel free. I'd love to get $100 from each and every one of you. You can do it monthly, 10 months, 10 bucks a month, or you can do it all at once, or you can do it in $5.72 at a crack if you like math a lot. But it's all up to you, and I totally appreciate you guys listening. This week, I am doing stand-up comedy outside of Seattle, Washington, a benefit for my buddy Kermit Apio, his kid's high school. So if you want to come to that, there's a link on the scheduling page of JackieCation.com. It is going to be a great one. Oh, the only other thing, I guess, would be I'm doing a new podcast with Lori Kilmartin over at Nerdist, just talking about doing stand-up, us being road comics and ladies working the road. And then if you want premium episodes of The Dork Forest, it's at thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. And that is, they're $2 a pop, and they're just, if you're jonesing for more Dork Forest, there's always going to be free episodes every week on Tuesday, but those are just live episodes that cost me a little bit of money to make, so I'm passing the non-savings on to you. So if you'd like to donate or you'd like to buy those, I appreciate it, and I hope you enjoy them, because they're super fun as well. Okay, thanks for coming out, and enjoy the show. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm back in my living room with the Dork Forest, and with me, Troy Conrad, one of the founders, I think, creators of Setlist, one of my favorite shows on the planet, quite honestly. I've talked about it on the Dork Forest before. At Troy Conrad for Twitter, at Setlist Show, I think, right?
Yeah, Setlist Show.
For Setlist. And then you're also a photographer, so on Instagram it's at Troy Conrad's, plural.
That's right.
Yeah. And Setlist is on the Nerdist YouTube channel. People can actually watch.
Yeah, if you type into YouTube Setlist Nerdist or Setlist Comedy, playlist comes up of 60 episodes, one of them, Jackie Cation.
Me, writing the mullet joke for the very first time,
Which made the album.
Yeah, you gotta love that, right? That's my favorite thing about Setlist, is that you can get like real signature bits out of it.
I think people don't realize how great it is for generating material. Like, as long as you write shit down afterwards, then you're good.
Yeah, right. I've taken to recording them, quite honestly, just on my iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
I got an iPhone 4. Troy, pretty proud of it.
Oh, the four.
Yeah, the four.
I heard good things a while back.
it's got a recorder on it. Anyway, so it's good. What's humansofcomedy.com?
Is that
your photography website?
Is a new website with photography. Some of the stuff I do. I do a lot of photography at the Comedy Store.
Oh, okay.
And all over at the Improv and different places. And I've been just sort of accidentally, I started just taking pictures of comics, taking pictures of people who work at clubs.
Okay.
And so I'm calling it Humans of Comedy.
Because it's, by definition, the actual thing that's happening.
Yes.
Right? Fair enough. I like it. It's catchy. So, Troy, I asked you for a list, and my favorite thing is that you mentioned another comic. But we're going to talk about that in a minute, because what I really want is MMA, mixed martial arts.
Mixed martial arts.
Do I have that right? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, that's right.
Is it karate? What is it?
Karate.
Is it judo? Is it jiu-jitsu? What is
karate
it?
Karate is one form. Jiu-jitsu is the most common
Because it's mixed, I suppose.
It's mixed. It's a little everything. It's a little karate. It's a little judo. It's a little jujitsu.
Is it a little punching in the head?
Kenpo. It is some punches and kicks to the head often.
Kenpo.
That part I don't like that much. But.
Because it seems a little brute force-y.
Well,
it's not as fun.
You know what? No, I enjoy brute force. It's fun to watch people who are committed to destruction.
Okay.
But in agreement that it's cool.
Consenting adults,
like,
right?
Like, yeah, not only consenting adults, but people who are friends. Like, it still blows my mind when you see someone fight. Like, you know, the UFC is the most popular. Like, it's the most popular one. That's the ultimate fighting championship.
Okay,
but that is, sort of what's brought this mainstream. It used to be kind of a thing that a few people watched.
It was in the back room of dive bars, possibly?
Yeah, exactly. Or alleys.
Right, or just alleys themselves.
Yeah, just happening live in alleys.
We want to see two guys. And these are athletes, right?
These are not only athletes. These are the most conditioned athletes of any athletes, I would
argue.
Did they
invent cross-training? What happened?
CrossFit, you mean?
CrossFit.
Yeah.
No, it was cross-training, and now it's CrossFit.
Yeah, you're right.
I haven't kept up.
You're right.
I'm so sorry. I'm still on walking.
Yeah.
So, did you try? Have you done any of this?
I did this. So, this is a strange thing of how I got into it. Is that I had a severe injury almost 5 years ago.
Okay. Did you wipe out and hurt yourself? Or
no, when Setlist started, we went to the Edinburgh Fringe the first year.
Right.
I was accountable for all the gear and setup and tech, and I carried with me...
it's super hilly there.
Not only super hilly, cobblestones everywhere. So you can't
They got history all over the place.
And by the way, in this case, a little too much history because you can't have a rolling suitcase. Like just a bicycle is difficult there.
Wow.
Those cobblestones will kill you.
Wow.
So I couldn't carry a wheeled suitcase. There was no way for me to carry. I had to carry a backpack with about 100 pounds of gear. Never thought about it. Never occurred to me that you could damage yourself doing that. So every night, you know, I'm exhausted. I'm working these like 18-hour days.
Right.
The show ends, you know, I'm walking home.
Because there's 7 nights a week shows for a month or something. Is that true
or is it 6? I think we did 30 shows in 25 days. So it's every night a show.
Oh, geez.
It's a month of shows.
Right.
And, you know, so I had to walk home.
Okay.
And I had to carry this giant backpack.
There was nowhere to store it at the theater?
No, because if it gets stolen, show's over. Yeah. I could store it. And there's a 50% chance it'd still be there.
Oh, those odds are not.
Yeah,
that is
they're
nothing.
Not great.
Nobody's interested in those odds.
Yeah.
I'm not making that bet, and neither were you.
No, I was not willing to bet. But I should have made that bet because what it cost me is my back. What it did is it compressed my spine. It smashed my discs together, and that pressed on the sciatic nerve, which meant that I couldn't, for 4 months, I couldn't stand up, sit down, or lay down.
Wait a minute.
Now think of, is there any other position that exists?
Yeah.
There is one.
What is it?
And that's what I had to do for 4 months. I had to lay face forward over a gigantic yoga ball. That was the only thing I could do.
That didn't scream pain at you.
It didn't scream pain. And I elected to not do heavy pain medication.
Right.
I did enough ibuprofen to damage my stomach forever.
Sure.
But I was just really freaked out. I'm real neurotic, and I think my mom made me so paranoid about drugs. I was freaked out. So I actually just endured excruciating pain. And
Can I feel your muscle? No, I'm going to ask.
Well, anyway. You know what happened, though, is I accidentally, I would just, you know, it was very difficult. I watched television. There was not much I could do because of all the pain.
Right.
When I was clicking through, I would never watch people fighting. That's disgusting to me. I don't watch sports. I can't even name a sports team. I don't watch football.
You don't seem like a sport guy, and you don't seem like
I know nothing.
You seem more of a pacifist in life.
I'm more of, when it comes to sports, probably in the pacifist zone. I mean, I was a runner in high school.
Long distance?
Yeah. My dad was a runner. I was a long distance guy.
Okay.
I attempted wrestling, and I was 0-6, and that's all we'll go into there.
Wow.
That means that I was beaten a lot.
Yeah, that's you not winning.
Was me not winning 6 times.
Yeah, there was no.
So that was not my thing.
That wasn't your thing. That's fine.
Yeah. So like,
So you're flipping channels.
I'm flipping channels, and I see this stuff, and I always turn as fast as possible because like, oh, there's blood. This is awful. Well, when I was in that level of pain, it didn't matter. Like, I wanted to, now I was like, I'm in so much pain. It was interesting to see other people work through their pain.
Oh,
right?
Misery loves company to some extent.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what I found is these guys, they go into the ring when they fight and they got pain. Like, they're dealing with pain that day.
Okay.
Maybe not a broken leg, but
right.
they're dealing with, like, you know, when it's like, your leg hurts so bad, you stub your toe or something, or whatever that pain is, and you don't even want to go outside, they still go out into the ring.
Right.
That was inspiring for me. So
okay.
what I said was, I am going to do this when I get better.
Okay. How long did it take you to get better from the sciatica?
4 months. I had to have a couple epidurals, and then I eventually got better.
Okay. What's an epidural? Is that
epidural is what, when they,
I think they do it with pregnant ladies, don't they?
I don't know if this is, okay, this is graphic. Yeah, they do it with pregnant ladies. I'm assuming it's the exact same thing.
Because of contractions or because of muscles?
I'm not sure why they do it for pregnant, because this was, I lay down on my stomach and they stab a needle into your back and it goes into your spinal sac. And they inject cortisone. The first time was actually so painful that I turned like white as a piece of paper. Like I actually looked in a mirror and I was white. Like I didn't know your skin could just go
drain all of the
paper.
Yeah.
And I I just collapsed. Like it was the worst.
You just passed
thing.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the second one was okay. So, and then it got me better. Anyway, that's what got me into watching this sport.
Right.
And then I said, I'm going to do it. So then I, after I got better, after 4 months, I started taking some jujitsu.
So you went to class with children or with adults?
No, grown adults.
Okay, so everybody's learning. Everybody's learning jujitsu.
That would have boosted my self-esteem if I had just been able to compete against children.
I will kick your ass, 6-year-old.
Yeah.
So what is a jujitsu class? How does it start?
Jujitsu is grappling. Jujitsu is an interesting thing. It's like you can do it and never get hurt. You can do it forever and, you know, well, I won't say never get hurt, but it's designed so that you can do this and it's all tapping out. Like there's no striking or hitting or it's all grappling and submissions. Like you grab someone's arm and if you get them in the right position,
they have to
tap out. Or if it was a bad guy, you could break their arm.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
they take it right out of the shoulder socket.
Right. So they show you how to hold people.
Yes.
And then if the holding is not creating the desired whatever, you can say, well, we're done holding. I'm going to actually pull your arm out of its socket.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so they teach you up to that point.
Yeah, but you can actually play. You can do jujitsu all out. Like you can go full strength and practice it at 100% and never get hurt.
And not
hurt anyone else.
Oh, that's great.
Right.
Because everyone could just go, okay, you win this round.
Yeah.
And we stand back up and we do it again.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's jiu-jitsu. Okay.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. So there's no hitting and no striking and all that. And then, you know, then there's Muay Thai. So I did some jiu-jitsu and some Muay Thai.
What's Muay Thai?
Muay Thai is
the same thing.
Awful, deadly striking, kicks, strikes, elbows, ouch.
Oh, using sort of the pointy parts of your body?
Using elbows. Certainly elbows, knees.
Okay.
Yeah, using pointy parts of your body is
to disable or?
To damage and disable.
So does jiu-jitsu tell you how to get out of the holds too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Big time.
Because I just realized that after 30 seconds, I was like, what if someone's holding you and you don't want to be held? They probably teach you how to unlock the box as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you watch like a jiu-jitsu type of thing or grappling thing, it's like watching a chess match. Like you're just seeing these guys counter each other's moves and it's just amazing to watch like high level people do it. Let's say you're doing jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And you're going to throw down with someone who's taken 3 more classes than you.
Yeah.
You 100% lose. Doesn't matter the size of them or the size of you. It doesn't matter. It could be a 10-year-old kid. If they had 3 more classes than you, chances are they're going to win.
Right, because they can get out and then get you in a new one.
Because you don't know how to counter the thing that they know, that they
right.
learned on those extra couple days. That's amazing, right?
Yeah, that is amazing. And so is it, if you're evenly matched, right, the same number of classes, is it then a matter of strength? Or can you use their strength against them? Is it that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like the weaker
people can?
I guess
it's a matter of skill. I don't know. Strength actually doesn't have, like, there's like all these famous things on YouTube where it's like 120-pound guy against a 350-pound, you know, linebacker guy.
Yeah. And he can get out.
Who doesn't know jujitsu? The little guy always wins.
Interesting. Okay.
It's really fascinating. And that's even if the big guy can hit him, like punching.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter. The jujitsu guy wins.
Right. Because there's holding and there's getting out of holds, and is there dodging? Or not so much?
I don't know.
Not at this time.
Well, yes, I'm sure there's that. They don't call it that, because you're grappled, you're entangled, you're entwined. So there's
it's very much wrestling.
Yeah, there's escapes. Yeah. Well, it's wrestling is a little different. I mean, this is like actual, you're dealing with appendages and you're trying to submit your opponent
okay.
and cause them pain so that they tap out.
Right, because wrestling, I think they grab each other's torsos.
Yeah. In wrestling, I don't think... Well, I don't know. Can you choke someone in wrestling? I mean, there used to be, like, some illegal choke holds and stuff. But,
sure.
Like, wrestling...
Baron Von Raw. I don't know. Remember the Claw? Baron What's-His-Face? Anyway.
No.
It's an old wrestling guy from the 70s. My grandmother used to watch it.
Oh, okay. I've never watched pro wrestling, by the way. I know nothing about it. So I'm illiterate when it comes to sports.
Right.
This caught me by surprise. It certainly was a strange detour in my life to be not only someone who didn't care about sports, but I was always kind of like anti-sports. Like, ugh, who gives a shit? I hate sports.
Right. It can get just as judgmental as, because the jocks were so judgmental when we were in school. And now you're like, well, now you aren't even a jock. You're just a guy who watches sports. And so I remember getting super judgmental about it. But I've had sports people on the show who are not, they're just people who like to watch sports. And it's always interesting to me when someone's dorkdom is sports, because I'm like, tell me why.
You
find out that there's two main reasons, as far as I can tell, with like if it's football, baseball, basketball, soccer, hockey, rugby, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Swimming. It's twofold, as far as I can tell, and I'm sure there's more to it. But the two things that I've noticed is people like not knowing who's going to win a thing. Like, it's a real contest of who the hell's going to win.
Yeah, you don't know.
You don't know. And the second thing is they like to see people who are really good at a thing. Like, they're gifted. Like a football player.
Someone really talented.
Right. Like, if you played catch with a professional baseball player, it's a different game than playing catch with your brother.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, then you're just throwing the ball around. But they would have to bring the game down so low to play catch with a real, like, shortstop or something, where you're like, this is amazing. Like, they would be 300 yards away and they would still hit your glove. And you're like, I can't even get it to you back.
Yeah.
Hopefully you have a bag of balls.
Yeah.
And so, but I think those were the two things that I noticed why people did enjoy sports.
That makes perfect sense. Now, those two things that you said.
Yeah.
You don't know who's going to win.
Yeah.
And you like seeing someone's talent and skills.
Right.
That's set list.
That is set list.
That is what. That is why I'm so passionate about set. Like, I love set list. Watching people have, because your opponent, it is like a jujitsu match in a way, right? Your opponent is the screen behind you with that topic.
Right.
It's both the antagonist and it can also be your friend. Like,
yeah.
Because
the only tool you have is that damn list.
Yeah.
I mean, or
that's the only thing you have to go off. You have your tools that you develop.
You have your own tool bag of tool is not a great word. But
thing you have to work with.
Right.
Like,
it's the thing you've been handed once you walk in the room.
Yeah.
Right? And it's you can use everything that you've built up around it, but it's not So it can either help you or hinder you. Sometimes the words are just nonsensical words. The set list, of course, for people who don't know, it's essentially topics or just words that you turn into bits. And you have to, the conceit is that supposedly you're not supposed to act like you've never seen it before.
Right.
You're supposed to act like this is your set list. You wrote it. And then all of a sudden, all you have to do is remember why you would have written down babysitting, Nazis or whatever. And you're like, why is that a thing?
Right.
And you're like, interesting.
Yeah, it's improvised stand-up based on topics you get in the moment. So the comic has no idea what that is. But here's the thing is, like, it brings out your skills. Like, as comics, we don't know our skills. Like, we don't know sometimes all the tools that we have available in our toolbox. We don't know our own Swiss Army knife because we're just getting feedback in terms of like applause or silence, applause or silence.
Right.
But like when you're confronted with these weird challenges of like, what the hell is that? And you have to act like that's normal. You start you start digging deeper and finding all these things you have you didn't know you had.
Right.
You know, and I think that's probably what comes out if you're ever in a real actual fight. That's why people after set lists say, hey, I'm shaking. I have adrenaline. Like, right. It feels like you just got in a fight.
Right. There's a buzz to it for sure. You're totally buzzed.
Some people say before the show, like, especially like first time, they're like, I want to leave. I think I want to go. I don't want to do this. Like,
you get so a little nauseous.
It's triggered your fight or flight. So you learn when you're in a situation where that's triggered, you're about to learn something.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, you're going to learn something.
Right. Whether you put yourself in that situation or if circumstances did, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's my next question.
Yes.
Muay Thai.
Oh, yeah. Muay Thai.
Did you take Muay Thai classes?
I did some Muay Thai. Yeah. And I didn't like,
it's a lot more hitting.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I remember is I was like sparring where you don't hit anybody hard. You just kind of like, but you can make contact with boxing gloves on.
Okay.
And this guy was like kind of I think he had done real fights and stuff. He was obviously very, very like he was a badass and he was bigger than me.
Right.
And I'm new in class and he's telling me keep your guard up. And I have gloves.
Yeah.
And that means you hold your gloves up in front of your face while you're boxing because that way you're protected a little bit if there's a punch coming in. But I couldn't remember that, right? This is the downside of ADD. Like, I'm punching and then I forget, like, put your hands back up.
Right. Well, I don't think that's even ADD. I think that's a learned skill.
Yeah,
just, where you're just like, you're trying to make your feet work right. You're trying to also see if there's an opening to hit him.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's the not. Did you see the Bells of St. Mary's? I did.
Well,
and the nun teaches the little boy how to box. Anyway, so.
Well, look, I found the cure for ADD.
What is it?
Getting hit in the face.
That'll sharpen your focus.
I feel like it sharpened my focus incredibly. Like, after that, it was so easy I didn't even have to think about it, and I kept my guard up. Like, I kept the gloves in front of my face after that, and I still do, even just walking around at home.
Right, you're constantly like, don't hit me.
But you know what, though? It was really a fascinating, like, I just learned so much. I learned about life from doing this stuff, you know? And I did that for a short time, and then I went to kickboxing, so I still do kickboxing.
Okay, so you went from jiu-jitsu to Muay Thai to kickboxing.
Yeah, which is not as much, like, that's one tiny tool for MMA, and it's not like I'm going to be doing any actual fights or anything. I'm just doing this for my own enjoyment, my conditioning. I love it because I learn something about myself every time I do it.
What do you learn about yourself?
If you push yourself beyond, like sometimes I'm pushing myself to a point where I think I'm going to throw up or I'm going to pass out, and I always go like, I wonder if I'm going to have a heart attack and die right now. Like, there's that.
Wow.
But it's like, I'm not going to. Like, I don't know. I can call my parents and ask about their medical history. It's not going to happen. So it's like that. It's like that resistance, you know?
Yeah.
I learned to overcome it. And then I'm, you know, it's like, oh, I'm committed to. So I'm going to stay in this class. I'm not going to leave class early or whatever.
Right.
Like,
it sort of builds character kind of thing. Yeah. To some
and then,
extent.
You know, and then there's some like, girl next to me who's new and she's just done yoga and she's kicking my ass, you know?
Right.
And so, it's like, well, she just started. So I have to set an example if I, you know, like,
okay.
It's like, I feel like I want to put myself under pressure. So
okay.
That's why I stay and I learn stuff.
Right. And now kickboxing, is it exactly what it sounds like? Are you kicking things and punching things?
Yeah. It's kicking, punching things.
Can you kick high now?
I can kick pretty high.
Can you kick up to your to your head?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I could easily do a head strike, no problem.
Okay.
It's just it's the speed of that. That's like, how much are you training? Because anyone can avoid a head kick. You put your hand up and. But
if it's slow enough, anybody can get the hell out of the way.
Yeah,
of that.
Okay. But if somebody's training and they're like doing a lot of leg kicks,
yeah,
that can come up pretty fast. Catch
you by surprise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the punching, do you work like the bag or the speedball?
Yeah, do the bag. Yeah, do the heavy bag.
The heavy bag.
Yeah.
And
sounds like I'm a real crazy athlete right now. It's not like I'm doing this all day. This is just a couple times a week.
Right. So I, for the shortest amount of time in the world, I had a personal trainer, and he had me punching into a thing. He was actually, he wasn't great. He pushed me harder than I mean, he probably thought that it was going to build character, but it actually fucked up my hip. And so not great, but I know what he was trying to do. I don't care.
Yeah.
It was too bad because he was and it was at Bally's. You know that they're out of business now.
Yeah, they are.
For a reason, because that guy wasn't very well trained.
Right.
So, because he should have known better than what he was doing. But,
that's a real problem.
Yeah. So I did. But I was excited to hit the heavy bag, and I was excited to hit the speed bag that hangs
it's
from the
stress
ceiling.
Relief.
Yeah. And to sort of get the rhythm on the speed bag was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still can't do that, by the way. That's incredibly hard. Yeah, you were able to do that?
No, I was not able to do that. But it was really fun trying.
Yeah.
It was like, try new things and not, I don't have to be good at them. I'm just like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm all right. I can try. Like, I tried to windsurf one time. It's really hard, it turns out. It's a learned skill, much like improv.
Yeah.
Much like absolutely every damn thing in the world. But I did have I had a hell of a good time falling over for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
There's a great book called The Dip by one of my all-time heroes. His name is Seth Godin.
Okay.
He's my favorite author in terms of like for somebody who's like an entrepreneur, somebody trying to achieve goals. And this guy.
Is it sort of like encouragement lit?
Well,
nonfiction,
not as much encouragement.
I made that up, by the way. I don't know that's.
Wait,
a
what
term.
Did you call it?
Encouragement lit.
Encouragement lit. What is that combination of?
It's sort of like self-help, you can do it, kind of thing.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So it's a little less of that, and a little bit more of it's about taking action, not just like, hey, I have some good ideas. Okay, well,
okay.
Did you ship them? Did you, how many, you thought of a cool idea for a product. How many of them did you sell this week?
Or produce or anything?
Or produce.
Did you do anything?
Yeah.
Or did you just sit there?
How
and
many
think
new
about
jokes
it?
Did you write this month? How many new, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. Like actually, you have to measure art by shipping, not just by, I thought of something.
Well, it's,
and that includes shipping is delivering a joke on stage. That's
right, right. Yeah, that's so he calls it shipping because it's – I mean, whenever anyone says, you know, I have a great idea for a movie or a play or a joke or a thing, you're like, did you write it down? Is the first step to – you know, I have a great idea for a novel. Have I written it?
Right.
I have not.
Right.
Then I don't have a great idea for a novel.
There's a video called Quieting the Lizard Brain. And you can go, if you Google it, or it's actually on Vimeo, it's not on YouTube. And it's him talking about, it's kind of like a 10-minute video.
Same guy, Seth
kind of like
Goddard.
A TED Talk. Okay. Yeah, Seth Godin. Yeah. It's kind of like a TED Talk. And he's talking about the Wachowski brothers who made The Matrix.
Okay.
And how they said, like, when they moved to LA, they were like, they figured out that it's really easy to think of a great, like, amazing idea for a movie. It's really easy to do that. You know what's really hard? To actually make the movie.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. How many people do we know that have fantastic ideas for movies?
Sure.
But then
and even
those
less.
Are a dime a dozen.
Right. And a movie, you're going to need a couple hundred people to help you, or at least three.
Yeah.
And
Or no. Yeah. Yeah. You need people to help you. You don't necessarily need, like, you can find ways to make that happen, even if you don't have the funding. There's all kinds of things you can do.
Right. Like, there's orchestrating of stuff that can happen to make it at least at some level. I mean, you think about the South Park guys who animated that thing, and then for some reason, I mean, and part of it, of course, is that George Clooney saw it, and then he passed it around at Christmas, and then, you know, somebody said, oh, George Clooney's cool. I do find this funny. How do we hand these two guys a giant bag of money?
Yeah, but they kept making stuff. If it wasn't George Clooney, it would have been someone else because they were going to keep making stuff until it got out there.
And they would have been perfectly, in my opinion, I'm perfectly happy just continuing to make stuff.
To make stuff, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, if someone eventually cares, that would be awesome. But until that happens, I will continue to make stuff because that's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember where I heard this, but someone was saying like that the measurement of like how successful things are, like there's doing stuff for money and there's doing stuff for the love of the game. And then there's a blend.
Right.
the number one of those, take a guess. What's the most effective one? Doing it for money, doing it for the love of the game, and doing it for a blend.
Probably the blend. But the love of it, I would say the love of it, but it took me a long time to realize that I deserved to be fairly paid for stand-up comedy. And since I have decided that, I have been happier in my stand-up. I think I've been more creative, and I feel more respected and more able to try new stuff. Do they think it's the love?
From this thing that I can't remember where I heard it.
Right. I just had one of those.
I'm sure somebody can Google this. Apparently, the blend was last.
The blend was last?
Yes, blend was last. First is doing it for the love of the game. Second is doing it for the money.
Okay.
And the blend is probably, I'm guessing, it's because you are...
Because it muddies both of them or something?
Because it affects, but you start compromising and blah, blah, blah. But if you're doing it for the love of the game, you figured out that you're doing your thing that you're supposed to be doing in the world.
Right.
If you're doing it for the money, you figured out something that people will buy.
Right.
But if you're doing it for the blend, then you're kind of like on the fence.
On some sort of weird fence.
And you may not be making full art.
Like, oh, interesting.
You might be making something that's like people are going to buy, but it's half art. Like, or something. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's not a scientific thing.
No, not at all. But the only thing I would say that, because I would love to do everything just for the art of it, but, and there, my favorite line, of course, is my dad who says, never say no without a number.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, I firmly believe in everything you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, the thing is that sort of freed me up to say, no, with a number.
Right.
And so I get to be super creative and keep going. But if you want to pay me $11 million,
right,
then I will come to your weird gig in the middle of Montana
right.
and do the weird show that you're doing. And,
yeah.
But of course, the caveat, of course, as my father has said, make sure you pick a number that you're not going to be mad about.
Right.
Because eventually someone will offer you that amount of money and then you were forced to do it.
Yeah.
And, the first time I did it, the first time I said no with a number, which, the number was too small.
Yeah.
And
yeah. We sell ourselves short. Sure.
Right. Constantly. So, yeah. but what does the dip mean?
So the dip is the, so every project has, what was the thing you were talking about that you said you started doing, and then it wasn't fun anymore or something like that. You were just talking about a minute ago.
Oh, the boxing or the
no.
Working out.
Maybe it was. But
that's
it,
a classic.
I don't know. Okay. So here's what the dip is. It's the period of time where your project that you started, whether it, let's say it's an activity, it's a job, it's, you're going to write a book, you're going to write a poem, you're going to do a podcast, you're going to make a movie. The dip is where it gets not fun anymore. And every single project has it.
Has that. Okay.
If you go to write a book,
yeah,
it's really exciting at first to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
Then you hit a wall. And you go, oh, this is dumb. This book's stupid. I don't need to do this book.
That's the dip?
That's the dip.
Right.
And you have to decide, is it worth it to quit right now at this dip? Like, you've already done all this work, right? Now, if you're right, and let's say you're writing a book and you're like, oh, this book is awful. It's generally, that's not true. It's
right.
What we tell ourselves so we can quit in the dip. But if you work through the dip, you got to have a real sense of commitment. You got to have accountability. You got to have somebody who's like busting your ass to make sure you work through the dip. You get on the other side, and then it sort of becomes easy again.
Right.
You
right.
Know?
There's just there. Yeah. There's a point in everything. What, you know, Andy does game design. There's always a part where he's like, "Well, I'm not having fun actually doing this right now." And you're like, "Will you have fun after you're done with that stupid, boring task that will make it?"
Yeah.
Probably.
I made a movie with Eddie Pepitone. Eddie Pepitone started a movie called Runyon Just Above Sunset. It's Eddie climbing Runyon Canyon as if it's Mount Everest, and it takes him 6 days and a Sherpa and an expedition leader, and you know, it's a whole crew.
Yeah, I saw it.
Oh, you saw this? Okay.
I saw it. Yeah,
okay.
But it's probably on Netflix or is it just on YouTube?
No, it's on Funny or Die. Okay. Yeah, it's on Funny or Die as a series, but then we made it into a film that's on DVD. So Eddie, there was a point in this movie, like, first of all, Eddie is the great, if someone's going to make a film with Eddie, it's the greatest thing in the world. Every day is pure laughter.
Yeah.
You could just follow him around with the camera. Everything he does is perfect.
Right.
Hilarious.
It's a treat.
You kind of go, oh my God, I have too much stuff to use. Yeah. Because everything that comes out of his mouth is unbelievable. So that's really fun. There's no dip there.
Right.
You know where the dip comes in?
The editing?
When you sit down. All that footage is loaded. Exactly. You know exactly where I'm going with this.
Oh, my God.
And now you have, like, you know.
Just hours and hours.
60 hours of footage, that, which was, by the way, was supposed to be just a sketch we were going to shoot in 2 hours.
Right. It was going to be a five-minute sketch.
It was going to be a five-minute sketch, Funny or Die, and then it became a whole thing, you know? That's probably Eddie.
That's Eddie right now. He knows.
And so the editing. Why is the editing such a dip? Because one, you can't skimp on that. You got to pay somebody. You have to be hands-on with it. You can't just like give it to somebody and then forget about it. You actually have to like work on it. So it was really stressful, and it lasted for months and months. And then there were editors. You give them the money,
right,
and
right.
They bail.
Oh, right, because it was too much work to some extent, or they got another project.
This is too much. It's like, oh, I can't really get to it right now. It's like, well, but you cashed the check.
Yeah,
that was my whole budget.
Yep.
Yeah, but I organized everything for it's all labeled well, and I was supposed to have a thing, so I went through multiple editors, and it took probably 10 months to get edited. I'd say around there. You got some important callers
this
happening.
This is Scott. Fucking Let's answer desperate.
That. Let's answer that. That sounds like a real important telemarketing call.
No, they're all telemarketing
solar,
calls.
It's solar things for your roof.
Sure.
Or insurance.
Oftentimes it's we donated once and they're going to call us forever. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's fine.
I get that.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Anyway. So. Yeah, so back to MMA, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, the dip is when you really... So, you know, and it took like, sitting down, Eddie's like, let's get this fucking thing done. And so we made it. We made it happen. And it was great. But it was a severe dip. It was so hard.
Yeah.
You know? That's what every good project has.
Right.
If it's worth it, there's going to be a dip, and it's going to be awful. And that's what happens too with, you know, with MMA, with any activity that you're into. It's like there's a point where you go, oh, I'm achy. I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
You still do it.
You still get up and you go and you learn. So you've learned jujitsu and Muay Thai and kickboxing.
I've learned a little bit of that. I know a lot more kickboxing because I've done that for a lot longer.
And what about Kenpo?
No, I don't know Kenpo.
What's Kenpo? What is it?
Kenpo is like, you know what? I've never taken Kenpo, but from what I understand, Kenpo is sort of like a combination of karate with, oh God, I don't know. I'm not going to
Did you ever
that.
Take karate or?
I did. I took Taekwondo when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I loved it.
Is Taekwondo karate?
No, but it's karate-like. It's very karate-like. It's a Korean karate.
Right. And is karate the one? It's the one that everybody makes fun of, where you're like everyone pretends to do it with the side of their hand, right?
Right. Well, you see, here's the thing. There's the
what
amazing,
like?
The amazing, exciting thing about like the fact that there's this UFC is out there, right? Is you see, hey, does karate really work like they say?
Yeah.
Like, because if karate worked like it did in the movies, then everyone would just do karate against an opponent in a real fight. You're seeing. But what you see is the people that know karate, if they're really amazing, then that's helpful. But karate does not win a real fight in a real situation.
Because you aren't, what, Spock?
You chop somebody with your hand.
It's not actually, you can't get to the nerve?
I've never seen anybody chop. Like, yeah.
Okay.
You're not going to win by chopping something, and you're not going to win by chopping board. No thug ever comes up to you with a stack of boards.
Right.
Like, I'm going to steal your wallet unless you can break these.
Right.
You know?
Right. But if you can break them, it is kind of a cool trick.
I mean, it might impress them.
Right. Well, how is it? I don't even know how that's possible. It's clearly the boards, you have to find the stress point, or the things have to be...
No, it's because...
You're beating bricks.
You have to chop with the grain, and they put stuff in between the boards so that it's super easy, and then each board collapses the next board. It's a bit of a big deal.
A bit of a hoax?
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal. It's just a parlor trick. But, like, you know, that kind of stuff is helpful, but what really, it turns out, you can watch... real people fighting. I mean, there are some rules, obviously.
Are there rules in MMA?
Yeah, there's big time. Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
you can't do awful things. There are certain chokes you can't do. There's certain, like, you can't touch someone's eyes and you can't, you know.
Oh, right. It's not street fighting on the docks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can't win at any cost.
Grab their finger and break off their finger or something.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff like that. But in a real situation, if you were being assaulted, then you probably would grab someone's finger and try and break it off or something.
Sure. But so what, when you watch an MMA match, so do you watch them now?
I watch them. Yes. I watch all of them.
Is there a season or are they ongoing?
No, it's ongoing. UFC is the fastest growing sport. MMA is the fastest growing sport in the world right now. And yeah, so there's pretty much every weekend or almost every weekend, there's a big fight.
There's a big fight.
Yeah. I'd say at least four to six a month even. Joe Rogan is the commentator.
Okay. Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that comic guy.
Yeah.
Sort of. And so
I love Joe.
Oh, do you love Joe? I don't know. I just, he reminds me of Piscopo, but I know that's wrong. Just because because they were both kind of weedy. And now they're just like a walking around fist.
Oh.
Because of the workout. And that doesn't mean anything bad about them. I just don't know them.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? It's funny. Like, I'm learning how much there's such different, strange world separation in comedy. There's the Laugh Factory. Have you ever done Laugh Factory?
Once 2 weeks ago for Steve Hofstetter.
Oh my God.
In 17 years.
Oh my God. Okay. So I've been to the Laugh Factory once or twice in 13 years.
Right.
And I haven't been in there again in like 5 years, probably 6 years. So I was in there twice. It's out of my world. I don't know that culture at all. It's like in the middle of China for me. And the Comedy Store was that way too. Until Roast Battle came along, which is Jeffrey Ross works with like Brian Moses. They do like newer comics do roasts, and they learn how to be writers. And that show is exciting and it's amazing, and that really got me kind of going there. And then I realized like, oh, there's a whole interesting world there.
Do you park at the Comedy Store?
You have to park on Sunset late at night, hoping to get some metered parking. Otherwise, it's $15.
Laugh Factory and Comedy Store, for me, I don't do them because there's nowhere to park.
Yeah, I go late at night.
20 years ago. Well, and because it was Mitzi when I moved here.
Oh.
And it was a road hoe, and it was a bunch of bullet heads.
Yeah,
it was just,
yeah.
Holy shit, who the fuck keeps calling? I can see why people might get mad eventually when that calls. It's funny if it happens once.
I mean,
but when it happens four times, fuck this.
I mean, this
bullshit.
Could be like a radio show where you take calls. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Telefund, you guys.
Yeah.
And it's the vets and the food bank and everybody we've ever donated to. And,
right.
Of course, Solar City, whatever's happening.
Yeah.
So anyway, but... So, do you watch on MMA?
You mean fighters I watch?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so you must know of Ronda Rousey, right? Because she's gotten really popular.
I only know of Ronda
popular.
Rousey because Kevin Sesha did an episode of The Dork Forest, and he mentioned Ronda Rousey.
Oh, okay.
And so I looked her up, and now she's lost her first fight.
Well, she just lost her first fight.
And people lost their minds, and I was like, well, did you expect her to win every
fight until she died? The answer is yes. 100.
From the grave. She was going to pull somebody's leg down with her.
Well, she was going to retire, but yes.
But there's no way anybody could win forever, right?
No, she could win forever. She is a forever winner person. At least we all thought this.
Right. Has anyone ever retired undefeated? Offhand.
No, I think I would know this.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because there's so many variables in mixed martial arts. That's why the mixed is there. Like that you don't.
Is it mixed between men and women too? Like
no,
women...
God no, God no.
I don't know.
It's all weight classes. So Ronda Rousey fights at 135 pounds.
So she fights.
She's fighting another woman. It's 135
pounds. Okay.
They weigh in the day before and then they rehydrate their bodies.
Okay.
And get normal again. So So she is an expert in judo. She had a bronze medal in the Olympics.
Yep.
A lot of the people, by the way, UFC, they're very well educated. A lot of them have medals from the Olympics. Some of them have gold medals.
Oh, like interesting.
They're really high level athletes.
Okay. And so, a lot of them are Olympic athletes.
Yeah. A lot of them are former Olympic
Americans,
athletes.
Or are they all
from countries? All over the world. That's one of the things I love about it, is because none of the stuff matters that people get weird about. Like, there's no division in, like, language doesn't affect, the language you speak does not affect how you fight.
For it is the language of the mat. Yes.
It's the language.
You're going to hear two words. You hitting me, hitting you, you hitting the ground.
Floor. Yeah. No, there's no language, race, religion, culture, country, none, zero of those things matter.
Okay. And
there's
and it's not like wrestling where there's a parade and there's a.
Oh, you mean pro wrestling?
Yeah, pro wrestling has a story and stuff, right?
Well,
so MMA doesn't have a story with the people. I mean, Ronda Rousey has a mythology.
They have they have real story. Like, I really get into their lives just because, again, from what I went through with my back, that was definitely the hardest time of my life. Like, it was awful. I mean, just psychologically, what that does, like, to just be a human who can't move or do anything.
Yeah.
And you start, I started feeling like I'm worthless. I can't do anything. It's just a terrible feeling. And then when I started walking again, I had to have a cane and I had to have strangers to help me up the stairs and stuff. And if you've ever had to do that, it humbles you to an extreme level. Like, if you've ever had to say to a stranger, can you take this backpack, this little like rolling backpack, and take it up to the top of the stairs for me? And then I'll just get it. And like 100% of people happy to do that.
Yeah.
But it's still humbling. I know that if someone asked me to do that, I would be happy to do it. But
happy to do it. I have a lot of friends who are single parents and they're like, I cannot get my kid's stroller up and down the subway, like in New York. You know, I cannot get the stroller up and down in New York. Right. I need a stranger to help me do this. And it's women who are raising their kids. You know, they may not be single parents. They may just be primary caregivers, right? Like their husband or boyfriend or something sends them money and they take them for Wednesday nights or every other weekend or some fucking thing. So they're not single parents.
Yeah.
But it's primary caregivers. So 5 days a week, they're wrestling a child up and down a subway system.
Well, for them, I think
it's super humiliating.
Right. But yeah. I think for them, the situation's way easier because they could just not have kids.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
No, I'm kidding.
They can have kids. Yeah, yeah. No, but I think it is humbling. It's humbling to have to ask anybody anything. Right. So
it's
you love the stories behind the fighters?
I love this. I just like hearing about their lives. Like, how'd they do? Because think about it. The adversity that gets you into a situation like that is not unlike the adversity that drives us to get into comedy. Like, what? Name a comic that didn't have some level of either getting picked on or humiliated in school or being.
John Mulaney?
Wait, was John Mulaney super popular and amazing?
He was. He seems so.
Valedictorian, homecoming king kind of person?
I think so.
Okay. All right.
No,
so
I
then
don't know.
You successfully, by the way, just named somebody when I said it
offhand,
as if you'd never be able to do so.
I think he's one of the guys. I think he is. I think he was good. I think he was loved as a child.
Hold on.
I'm not entirely.
He does talk about weird stuff with his parents, and his parents were weird. I don't know.
The thing is like,
everyone's.
Even if you're raised in the Rockefellers and you're raised with this sense of noblesse oblige, I mean, the human experience, it doesn't matter if you're the whitest guy in the world who had a silver spoon jammed up
Good
his
point.
Ass, you probably have some sort of sad sack version of yourself inside.
Internally, sure.
That you have to fight through to get to.
Totally.
So, but who's doing that in the MMA?
Wait, who's dealing with adversity, I mean? Or,
yeah, like, do you have a good story?
Okay, I'll give
about
you a couple examples.
About a fighter. Yeah,
yeah, I'll give you, okay, so Ronda Rousey is more commonly known out there. She, not only did she suffer from bulimia, she dealt with bulimia for a good portion of her life. She also, had her father took her and her sister skiing when they were kids, and they went sledding. They went on a sled, and I guess he, like, snagged a tree and he got hurt and he ended up being paralyzed and then having some complications. And about a year later, he didn't want to be a burden on his family anymore, and he killed himself, locked himself in the garage, turned the car on, carbon monoxided himself to death.
Wow, I think that affects the inheritance.
Yeah. Well, think about how that affects that child, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But because not only did your father just leave, but he left because he didn't want to complicate your life, and he wanted you to be able to do what you did, and he felt like he was holding you back because he was now completely like disabled, which is the situation that I was in. Like, I felt that way for 4 months. He went through it for maybe it was a year or two. I don't remember how long.
Right.
But it was really bad, you know?
Yeah, so he got super depressed and killed himself. Hey, if anyone's thinking of doing that, it gets better. Feel free not to kill yourself.
Feel free not to.
It's never going to solve it. I swear to God, everyone will be even sadder that you killed yourself.
Yeah, it's the one mistake you don't get to learn from, and it's also the one mistake that makes everyone that knows you very miserable and sad.
And angry. And just don't, there's no reason. That's not the answer.
Yeah.
It's harder.
I know
sometimes it feels harder to live than to kill yourself, but it gets better. Mm. I swear to God. I think we all know that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so...
She was a small child.
Yeah, she was, I don't know, maybe eight or nine, something like that. Eight or nine, I forget. But, you know, that that affects a person. And there's a fighter named Nick Diaz. He was a troublemaker, and his his grandfather had custody of him. His grandfather was like a track coach.
Okay.
And so this kid would get in trouble, and he'd have to leave his school and then sit by his grandfather while his grandfather ran track practice. So he just made this kid, this wild kid, he made him run laps all day because this kid had energy and he was a troublemaker.
Okay.
He made him run laps forever. He ran laps all day.
Like all day.
And then he would do it defiantly. Hey, I want you to run 100 laps. The kid would run 200 just to say, fuck you.
Right, right.
Turns out that's good for your cardio.
Yeah, yeah. That turns out it's the Tiger Woods. You're going to shoot the ball. I mean, it's 10,000 hours of whatever.
So this guy's DNA, if you look at it on a microscope, it spells defiance.
Right.
And so this is what he does for training. Like every couple of weeks he swims to Alcatraz and back. Like he just does that. He does he does marathons on the weekends. That's just that's not even his training. That's just like, for fun.
Right.
The guy's a cardio monster, so he can go forever. Like, that's one of his special skills,
Diaz. When you fight Nick Diaz, that guy, he's not going to get winded.
And he will never get winded. You can fight him for 7 hours straight, and he still just looks like it's the first round.
Right.
But that's amazing to me. Like, that guy, like, just his whole life, all of it comes from defiance. And when you see him, he's a guy that people don't like because he's kind of a jerk, right? But it's just, if he wasn't that guy that's the jerk, he wouldn't be the jerk that said, fuck you, Grandpa, I'm going to run 200. Like, that's what made him who he is. And that kind of says to me, like, all of us as human beings, we can accept people's individuality a lot easier when we realize that the thing that we hate about that, about them, is also the thing that made them the good things that we like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, whenever you have to find a reason to love somebody, you have to go back and find the reason they turned into the bad part that you don't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is some effort. And it has to be worth it to you, you know? Like, I do it with my family, you know? I'm like, okay, well, you're kind of a jackass, but what created that and what part of you do I love?
Yeah.
Because we are going to continue to be related, and I'm going to have to talk to you.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like an interpersonal dip, right? Like, you have to work through that, and you have to find that thing about that person.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting with like famous people. Like, you're like, well, I don't like her. You know, she did a bad thing, or, you know, I mean, there's some things that people have done that you don't have to, like, thank God I'm not related to Cosby. You know, I don't have to find a way to love Bill Cosby.
Well, we're all sort of related to Cosby.
I'm willing to reject that. I'm willing to reject being related to Bill Cosby.
That may not be factually true.
Even when I saw him do stand-up, I was just like, oh, good, it's just stand-up. You know, because he's a really great stand-up.
Yes.
But it's just stand-up. It isn't... I don't know what I thought it was going to be, like the fucking Holy Grail. Like, he was going to have, like, a halo, and he was going to come down, like he was actually in... I can't think of a heavy metal band, like Metallica, like, you know, like Sister Act, Mr. Sister. I don't know what the fuck. There was like a, Twisted Sister. I think I'm thinking of Twisted Sister. Remember Twisted Sister?
Of course I remember Twisted Sister.
We're not going to take it anymore. From 1986.
I enjoyed that reference. I rocked out quite a few times at Twisted Sister.
Did you enjoy the 45 seconds it took me to make that reference? Kind of. Sure. I think we did have to go into the archives for that.
I don't remember. We talked about this before. I used to be really into the rock music. Right?
Oh, into the rock and roll?
Did we talk about that? Oh.
Maybe I think the last time I was, I did this like three years ago.
Right. And just a quick reference to it. Yeah.
Everybody should know about at Troy Conrad, by the way, and at Troy Conrad's on Instagram.
That's where I put a lot of my photography because I do a lot of fun stuff. And of course,
Humans of Comedy is the new website, which has a bunch of pictures of humans who are involved in comedy.
A lot of stuff from the Comedy Store hallway. I'm doing these pictures in different scenarios with fisheye, different types of lenses. And it's a lot of fun, cool stuff.
You know the great guy who takes pictures, whose name I'm spacing because that's where I'm at in my life?
Dan Dion, Mike Carano.
I think it's Mike over at the Improv. Yeah, and he actually came up to me the last time, and I completely appreciate this, as he said, you know, I've been taking pictures of you on stage at the Improv for years, and I can't get a good one. And I was like, it's mostly because when I'm on stage, poops are hard to shoot. Oh, really?
Yep.
Because I never close my damn mouth.
You are one of those people. I have so many pictures of you, and if I click like 30 in a row, I'm lucky to have one where,
it's like your mouth is moving
or there's something.
There's a weird angle on my face.
Yeah.
And he's like, I would love to get a great picture of you. And I was like, I will try to write a slower joke.
You're probably second to Proops in terms of difficulty to shoot.
Yeah, I think that, and he's settled, clearly, because there are some great pictures. And I like some of the pictures that he's got of Proops over at the Proops at the Improv. They're very, he's a beautiful photographer.
He's amazing. Me and him nerd out on cameras like crazy. Every time I see him, we talk about like, oh, what's the newest camera? Oh, yeah, did you hear about this? It's got the bigger sensor and this 1.8 lens.
Well, this hasn't happened in a while, Troy Conrad. What? At minute 53 when I find out that we could have been talking about cameras the whole time.
Well, we could have been talking about cameras, but you know what?
You'll have to come back.
I thought about that, sure, but I don't know. You know what? I don't know. Photography for me is a weird thing to talk about because it's such a visual medium. I mean, I'm super into it, but like, what more do you need to know? Like, I freak out in excitement over cameras because I, again, it's another thing.
How many do you own?
To comedy. I have three still cameras.
Okay.
Are they quality digital? No, I don't do anything with film.
Did you get into it post film?
Yeah, I got into it. Yeah. The only reason I got into it was because when I moved out here, I started to tape some shows and I got a camera. But at that time, I moved out here, 13, 14 years ago. Not everyone had a camera. No one had a camera in Los Angeles, but not everybody had a camera.
There was a guy named Video Mike when I first moved out here, and he had a VHS camera, and he would record your set for you for $22.
Yes, okay, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, so I started to record shows, and then people asked me, "Hey, will you record my show?" So I accidentally got into all that, and then when set list started, I needed still pictures, so I got a nice camera, and then I went, "Oh my God, they do that! That's what they do."
It was like a whole new level.
Oh my God. Yeah. When you have
iPhone 4 has a really shitty camera.
Well, but you know what? Phone cameras they're amazing in the daytime. But try and take a nice picture in low light with depth of field where the background's all blurry and you see like glimmers of lights and you can't tell what's in the background. That only is attained through a good camera with a really good lens and a good photographer that knows what to do.
So a good camera is what? The number of pixels?
No, that actually has no bearing, really.
What makes a good camera?
Number one is a good photographer.
Okay.
But what makes a good camera? If I was going to boil it down to one thing, I would say a large sensor for stuff I do, a large sensor, which lets in lots of light. It's kind of like it allows me to take pictures in very low light without a flash. I don't do flash.
Okay.
I hate the flash.
You hate the flash. You're just going to use the existing light.
Yeah, but I'll take a picture of you in a dark room with just a candle lighting the room, and it'll look amazing.
Okay. Because of the sensor.
Because of the sensor. And of course, you know, you can, well, I'm a lens freak too. So like, yeah, a big sensor, but also if you have a really good lens that that opens really wide and gets all that light in, like when our eyes open really wide, when we're in the dark, that's the exact same thing. So yeah, I'd say sensor and lens.
So does a normal lens not open up all the way or something? Or
no,
is
no.
It, is it a lot it, of...
It's just cheap. Like it doesn't open it. You can get an inexpensive lens, but if you take a picture in the dark, you're going to have to hold the shutter open for like 2 minutes to get that. Like you're just not going to be, it's going to be, it's going to be blurry.
F-stop?
It's like your f-stop. Yeah.
Sure.
It's just going to be blurry. So you want to, you want a lens that has a really big hole in it. And that's just, that doesn't mean they just cut it up. It means that it lets in a lot of light. It's really good glass.
Like okay.
Really wide aperture. It makes everything, like if I take a picture of you with like a 1.4 lens, you're from the distance we're at, which is about 2.5 feet.
Okay.
Your nose would be in focus, but your eyes would not be.
Oh, weird. With a 1.4.
If I could adjust it that way, right?
Right.
If it's on 1.4. So like it's fascinating to see a subject that's right there, mm-hmm. and then everything around it is blurry. Things in front of it and things in back of it are completely blurry. You just see that thing.
How do you get both my eyes and my nose? With a bigger,
well, I would
like
just,
a,
I could,
a 1 point?
No. I should get a little further away. Like, I get a little further away, or I could change it to, I can adjust that to 1.8 or 2.8 or 4.
Okay.
I can adjust that aperture.
Okay. Yeah. See, I don't know.
That's the f-stop, yeah.
Okay, is that the f-stop?
Yeah.
I think I was into cameras for about a heartbeat in college.
Oh, okay.
And,
it's an exciting world.
It's an exciting world, and taking good pictures is amazing. I mean, to see good photographs is something that's super fun.
I think of it too with comedy. Like, every comic has a lens. Some people have, like, a really wide zoom lens, and some people have, like, this microscopic lens that does just focus on the tip of the nose, and that's what the person is talking about, you know, like a good example,
like more specific kind of comedy versus a broader
right absolutely,
okay.
Yeah, like
okay.
People that see the world through a big picture or see it through a very small lens, like there's definitely variables in comedy that way, you know.
Yeah I mean, it's I don't know, and it can all be done very, very well, of course. It doesn't matter how you see the world. If you can make it funny through that tiny, tiny lens, I like a broader brush myself.
I like a macro, yeah.
Yeah. It's some of my favorite comics can see the big picture and then make it super specific. I mean,
I think that Marin does that too a lot.
Yeah.
Like he takes that big picture and then he zooms in on it.
Right. You're looking at the whole world with Marin, but you're focused on the scarf that he's wearing.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
It's the juxtaposition that makes the comedy so resonant.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to me to be able to relate as broadly as possible to as many people in the audience. But I still want to talk about the very specific thing that I want to talk about for some
reason.
Yeah,
you get into like really cool details of things and then you dive into them.
Right.
It's really fun to see that. So like you do that same thing where you set it up with the big wide shot. It's almost like you're making a film. Like you set it up with that establishing opening shot. And now we cut to inside.
Right. And now I would like you to look inside my left pocket.
Right.
Which is where I'm keeping this toothpaste.
Exactly.
I don't know why. But it's like, it would be more fun. It's more fun to me if the more people, like if there's a guy sitting in the audience with his arms crossed and I can tell, I can almost at this juncture tell that he's thinking, why have I just spent $7 on a beer? I have a six pack at home.
Right.
If I can make that guy sort of uncurl, and I know that's not great because the thing about stand up is we all see that guy when 219 other people are having a perfectly good time, but that guy isn't. And I want to affect that guy. That isn't necessarily the most productive use of my time.
Right.
But so be it. You know, I mean, you do what you can.
Yeah.
Whatever.
No. Yeah, but no, that's an interesting thing. Like you're targeting one person in that way.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
It's a classic stand-up, you know, where you're just like, why is that lady so fucking angry? Why do I have to think about her for the next 40 minutes when I can enjoy the fact that 1,200 other people are having a great time?
You know what I've been talking. There's so many comics now that like you see like newer comics where they just automatically have to attack. And I've seen people who do this, who've been doing comedy a while. where, you know, nowadays you deal with stuff as a comic. People are going to be texting or whatever. I try not to let that stuff set me off.
Right. Well, yeah, I try to, you know what I try to think of it as? An indictment against my own cell phone use. You know,
what
because
do you mean?
I use, I'm on the cell phone more.
Yeah.
My head is face down on a mobile device as much as anybody's. And I get it. And I will shut, like I did a set at the Ice House about 2 weeks ago, and I got on stage and there was a guy in the front row talking on his phone.
Yeah.
After I'd been introduced. So the MC introduced me, and the MC should have probably said, hey, don't take that call. but I had to say, you know, you gotta hang up. And, and so he hung up, and then the phone was sitting there. And so I do a couple of jokes and I look over at him and he's texting.
Yeah.
Front row. At least I don't do it front row. Sit in the back. Play Bejeweled. Do whatever you need to do. Look up and occasionally go, oh, that's a good joke. And which is what I do because I see so much stand-up. But so he front row, he started texting. And I said, then it turns into an eighth grade situation where I'm like, you got to give me your phone. And then he gives me his phone. And then I put it on an empty table, three tables away from him. And I'm like, you can pick it up after the show. But now I had to use... I only got a 10-minute set. I'd use precious minutes. Where I don't get to tell my jokes.
And that's not usually, you can't put that
it's
in a special.
Super,
yeah.
Like, no, not that.
We do a set list in Santa Barbara every month. And the last show we had there 3 weeks ago, we had a guy with Down syndrome in the front row on an iPad. By the way, it would be terrible if a comic went up and not knowing that started ripping on this guy.
Right.
But I saw him before the show started. He's on his iPod, and that's what he does.
Yeah.
It never even occurred to me that that would be distracting. So why would it be – why does a comic have to attack somebody if they're texting? I know it's annoying. It's terrible. You want people to pay attention. But, like, at some point, you have to be able to get – you have to be able to, like, compose yourself and not let stuff like that throw you. Like, you have to be able to dodge that and stay focused. And it seems so distracting for comics now.
Well, like, it's like trying to tell jokes while a toddler's jumping on a bed next to you.
Yeah,
that's
true. There should be a show where that happens.
Right. You can do it. You would do it. I will say this, is that because you do prompter. Yeah, I mean,
you have
amounts of free time.
I make obstacle courses, so yeah.
Right. So you do make obstacle courses in stand-up comedy, which I think is... Yeah. Is why you're more sympathetic to, because I am not. I am not. I'm like, whoever came with that guy should have known better.
I'm all for throwing people out, stuff like that.
Oh, and I opened for Dana Gould probably 8 years ago. I was featuring for him at my home club at Acme, and the manager came back like twice during the weekend. And at one point, the manager came back because Acme had sort of accidentally publicized him as a writer for The Simpsons. So somebody brought their kid once, and they're like, no, this is an adult sport, Dana Gould. Dana Gould and adult topics. And then the next night, there was the manager came back and said, there's someone who's mentally retarded in the audience. And Dana does a joke about the mentally retarded. And Dana said, I'm totally doing this joke. Which I approve, quite honestly. Because if you have a joke about anything, if you can't do it in front of the people that you're in front of.
Then that's it. Yeah.
You're a dick.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
And so I go on stage and he's like, they didn't sit him in the front, did they? And I go, they did not. And so, you don't have to stare at the guy.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to stare at somebody on their phone. You shouldn't have to stare at somebody who is on their iPad or is what? Mentally retarded.
Oh, you mean in the front row?
In the front row.
Because you never know what comics are going to come up and not know that. And then there's too many variables. You wouldn't want to do that because you can create a situation.
Oftentimes they'll put the blind guy in the front and then you will accidentally call them on the fact that they're not watching. And they're like, well, I'm listening, but I'm blind. So I'm not actually looking at you. I'm very sorry.
I threw a free t-shirt at a blind man. It went right over, wrapped around his head.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
that was bullshit.
It's for true. That happened with Eddie Pepitone. Like, and I felt so bad because then afterwards, like, oh yeah, that guy's blind. And God.
Which then you just got to go and go. I mean, the thing about people who are differently abled is that they know that they're differently abled. And,
yeah.
And I mean, maybe not the Down syndrome kid, but he probably does.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
I'm sure someone has let him in on it.
Sure.
And Down syndrome doesn't mean that he doesn't have.
They have self-awareness of stuff, and they're actually amazing. Yeah, they can have amazing conversations, and they totally know what's going on.
Yeah.
And like. But it's not something you want to engage with because
you're
other
make
people
the rest of the audience
other
is going to be freaked out.
Yeah.
And it can affect the entire show. And nobody wants that.
No.
The person who is differently able doesn't want that. The comic doesn't want it.
100% of people don't want that.
Yeah, that's 100%. You're just like, straight back.
Well, I had a guy once, like, I always feel like when you say at the beginning of a show, everyone, please turn your cell phones off. That is a way of telling people, don't listen to anything I'm saying right now, because you've heard. It's like you don't listen to the airline spiel at the beginning of the. One guy is Boise Thomas. He goes, hey, everybody, please keep your phones on, put them on vibrate. He's like, you never know. You may get a really important call. Like, and I think he was halfway being a little facetious, like, because he made people go, I guess I wouldn't be getting anything that important. I guess I will turn my phone off. Like, he actually, like, reverse psychologized it.
Yeah.
He was like, keep your phone, but keep them on vibrate. Don't have it out loud because there's a show.
I know
but,
you're doctors.
Yeah,
he
said something like that.
I know that you're there's somebody trapped in a mine somewhere who might need to text you.
Yeah.
And
that guy, like, yeah, he didn't go over the top like that, but
no,
he
I
did,
know.
But
yeah.
He did, like, say something like, look, he goes, maybe you have a really a situation where you need to answer your phone, but, like, you can just keep it on vibrate. Step out of the room. Whatever. He made everyone everyone listened to that. And went, oh yeah, I should turn off my phone. Like all it did is make everyone turn off their phones.
Right, right. It's I've been to like Broadway productions where the phones go off.
Oh God,
and
no.
Second row. Just people not turning their phones off, and all of a sudden, or I was in a I think I saw The Frogs with Nathan Lane. And I was way in the back, but the phone rang in front of us, and she took the fucking call. And you're like, I think it was over $100 for these shitty seats. If you could not have your phone, that'd be great. If you could just somehow shove it up your ass, that'd be great.
I've had a phone go off at a funeral. Like, that's one of the – that's really awkward.
That was in 2 weeks' notice when it goes off. She's the bridesmaid, and for some reason she has it on her person.
Wait, what
and,
was that?
Sandra Bullock.
Oh, a movie
in,
2 weeks
in a movie.
Oh, I did not see this.
Oh, that's all right. Nobody has it. Just me and the 30,000.
Are you a rom-com person?
I'm very much a rom-com
person. Oh, okay,
I have not seen Trainwreck or Sisters.
All right. By the way, an entire episode someday, come back and talk about the movie Shakespeare in Love, because I could do 3 hours on that movie. Have you ever watched that movie?
Yes, I've seen it.
Okay, someday we're going to talk about it. Even
Fair
if
enough.
It's not on a podcast.
Troy Conrad, we're at an hour 10, so
hour
let's
10?
Wrap it up, man.
We got to wrap it up.
This is it. It's been great. Thanks for so much for coming on.
This was a blast.
And people, learn more about photography and MMA, and clearly stand-up comedy, but go to see some set list.
Yeah.
And follow Troy Conrad and at Troy Conrad's on the Instagram.
And set list show. And
Settlers Show on Nerdist.
And Prompter Talks.
So thanks so much for being on the show, Troy.
Thanks, Jackie.
And you know the rules, folks. Take care of each other out there.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?